Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Wednesday, brought to you by Metro Rooter, live at Everbank Field. Jaguars Today kicking off here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Fat Tony out all week long on vacation. We had J.P. Shadrick in yesterday. We had the Ozone in the day before. O'Halloran is out all week. You're flying solo with me today. Oh, of course, Tyler Devitt, always up and astute on all the latest ongoings in the sports world. Did you watch the All-Star game last night, Tyler? I take that as a no. I watch it. Yeah, he'll get back to me in 30 seconds on that one. I watched it on and off a little bit last night. I am one of these people that I've gotten to the point now, I kind of don't mind a little 3 or 4 day break from the sports calendar. It's not that bad. I don't have to live and die every day with Major League Baseball. It's coming. Football will be here soon enough. 2.5 weeks, we'll have them back on the field for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Today's the deadline day, of course, for franchise tag players to work out long-term contracts with the teams that applied the tag to them. 4 o'clock today is the deadline. There are a handful of players that the focus has been on, but there are 5 players that actually are in this situation, and we know a lot about Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas. We've been hearing that talk and the talk of possible collusion between their two clubs, the Dallas Cowboys and the Denver Broncos, discussing why they don't feel these guys are the equivalent of deserving of pay that Calvin Johnson makes. Now, whether or not that's true and they had those conversations is a story that the NFLPA is likely to want to explore if they don't get long-term deals done by 4 o'clock. Doesn't appear like it's very likely, at least for that duo, to get any kind of long-term deal done. And then, then the rhetoric, we'll see if they live up to it because it's been ramped up. Demaryius Thomas, all the latest reports indicate he's willing to at least sit out training camp and not show up until the start of the regular season. I don't know how much the Denver Broncos care about that. I would imagine he's going to keep himself in shape. You'd prefer to have the guy in, but he doesn't want to lose any money. He doesn't want to lose any game checks, and that's what people have expected will be the case with Dez Bryant. Ultimately, that he won't lose game checks. There's some question about that, though. He could sign a one-year deal worth more than the franchise tag tender, and that idea has been floated out there. They open up with a couple of division games the Dallas Cowboys do against the Giants and Eagles this year. And let's say they go 0-2 in the division quickly, coming off a 12-4 season. All of a sudden, the pressure to get Dez Bryant on board gets ratcheted up, and let's say they sign him to a $14 or $15 million one-year contract. They're not bound to the franchise tag number if they don't want to be, but they just would not be able to negotiate a long-term deal with him after today until after the season's over with. But if he got a $15 million one-year deal, let's say, and he gets 2 game checks prorated out of it, he's going to make what he was going to make anyway if he signs the franchise tag tender and plays for $12.8 million. So the question is, does he want to go into the season and maybe withhold his services and take the risk that the Dallas Cowboys get off to a slow start and then kind of be in a position where he'd have to root for that to happen? To have the ultimate leverage or the maximum leverage on the Jones family there in Dallas. Justin Houston led the league in sacks last year. Some hope that a long-term deal gets done with the Kansas City Chiefs by 4 o'clock today, but wouldn't be a shock to me if it doesn't get done at this point in time. I mean, you come down to this point, you've only got hours left. I don't know how much is going to change, although it could certainly change between now and then. Jason Pierre-Paul is not going to get a long-term deal done. We know that. The Giants pulled it off the table after he blew off one of his fingers in a fireworks accident. And Steven Gostkowski, the kicker for the New England Patriots, probably a lot of people don't even realize he's got the franchise tag applied to him. And I would think ultimately he signs the one-year tender, makes over $4 million a year, would make him the highest-paid kicker in the National Football League, I believe, for this year. And, the Patriots moved on from Adam Vinatieri. They'll certainly move on from Steven Gostkowski. It doesn't seem like they're the kind of franchise that's going to open up the checkbook and sign him to a 4 or 5 year contract based on, with a starting point being the 1 year franchise tag number for kickers. So, you got that going on today. We'll monitor that. I don't expect any news to come out while we're on the air between now and noon. If anything happens, it's likely to be much later in the afternoon, much closer to the deadline. We'll have Charles Davis join us from the NFL Network coming up in about 20 minutes or so. We'll discuss the latest Does he expect any deal to get done with any of these guys? Also an interesting situation going on out there right now with one of the Jaguars' division rivals. Don't know how many people are paying attention to the Tennessee Titans, one of the few teams actually worse than the Jags in the National Football League last year. Of course, they draft Marcus Mariota with the number 2 overall pick, swore that they really never considered trading the pick because they really view him as a franchise quarterback. Whether you believe that or not, or they just said that after the fact that they didn't get the offer that they wanted, they obviously committed to bringing him in. And then once you do that, you've got to commit when you draft a quarterback that high to build your future around that guy. Otherwise, you're wasting the pick. You don't pick that guy and then see what he's got. You pick him because you believe he's got what it takes. And then every step you take from that point on is about maximizing his ability to play up to his full potential. Well, Marcus Mariota has gotten good reviews this summer. Now, they're only OTA reviews. We understand that. As much as we are not going to sit here and praise offensive linemen and defensive linemen in non-contact drills and tell you who looks good in that capacity, other than who's moving their feet well, the experts will tell you. It's just kind of the same thing with quarterbacks. I mean, you know you're not going to get hit. You're in a kind of a 7-on-7 situation a lot of times. He's displayed good accuracy. You should display good accuracy in those kind of settings. But, you know, I guess the good thing is we haven't heard a lot about Mariota struggling with his drops, taking the snaps from under center, getting back in his back pedal, down 5-7-step drop, planting that back foot and letting the ball go and all that kind of stuff. You know, once he gets in a live game situation, that's going to be the real test. But the early indications are that the Titans are very happy with what they've seen from him on the practice field. Here's the issue. Marcus Mariota doesn't have a contract done with the Tennessee Titans, and in some small way, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are helping that be the situation, if you understand a poor choice of words on my part right there. Jameis Winston, when he did his deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, waived any talk of offset language. You hear a lot about offset language when it comes to contracts now, and it's pretty simple, really. It's not that complicated. If a player gets cut under his current contract, and if it's a guaranteed deal, some teams guarantee it only with offset language in there, meaning if another team were to go to sign you, let's say I owe you $5 million and it's guaranteed, but I cut you loose and another team signs you for $2 million. Well, if there's offset language in the contract, that means that $2 million comes off of the $5 million you were going to get from us, and we just have to make up the difference. Now we only have to pay you $3 million. It's a cost-saving, face-saving kind of move for franchises if they draft a guy and he turns out not to work out. Well, what kind of statement is it and are you making as a team if you're that hung up on that, on the number 2 pick in the draft? It's only a 4-year deal with a team option for a 5th year. So it's a 4-year contract. What are the odds you're going to cut loose the number 2 overall pick in the first 4 years of the deal? It just seems highly unlikely, highly irregular that would happen with a guy like Marcus Mariota. And, I mean, unless you, it kind of sends a signal that you're nervous that that's going to be the case. But Jameis Winston said, you know what, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to worry about offset language. You know what, if you cut me, I won't get to double dip. In other words, if I go somewhere else, if you cut me and I make $3 million here, you won't owe me the full contract on top of that $3 million. That's fine. That's his prerogative. So the Titans are saying, hey, the number 1 guy in the draft didn't do it, but here's the deal. The number 3 guy did get that. He got his contract fully guaranteed. I'm talking about Dante Fowler Jr. You got a guy who comes in who we know is not going to play a snap this year because he tore his ACL in the first rookie minicamp, and then he's got 3 years left on his rookie deal, and Dave Caldwell said, you know what, we're not going to mess around. We believe this guy's a big part of our future. We believe in our evaluation of this player. And as been the custom with more and more first rounders, we're going to guarantee the full value of this contract. Even if after a couple of years they decide Dante Fowler is a colossal bust and they cut him, the Jags will be on the hook for the full value of his contract, even if he signed somewhere else. Well, you know, to me it's a minimal risk. You're talking about really 3 years now. Next year nobody's going to expect Dante Fowler Jr., at least I won't, to probably be up to full speed. Despite the fact that he did the injury so early, he should be fully cleared to hit the ground running early in the calendar year of 2016. He's still going to be coming off a year of missed football. adjusting to a leg that probably isn't quite what it was before to some degree. So, you know, let's say he has a 6 or 8 sack season next year. It's not like he's any in danger of not making the football team. It's very low risk for Dave Caldwell to guarantee that contract for Dante Fowler Jr. But it gives Mariota's people something to point to and say, hey, why shouldn't we get something in our deal that the guy who got picked behind us got in his deal? What's the big holdup here? And the Titans have dug in their feet, and they say we're not going to change our stance, that this is the way we've gone about it. We've always had offset language in our player contracts. Titans interim CEO and president Steve Underwood said, I think it's important where a high first-round draft pick is concerned because it's the precedent. Everything we do is precedential for the next round of contracts. In other words, if we give it to him, if we bend with him, well, from this point forward, every first-round pick or every high first-round pick is going to want the same conditions. He says, so keeping the offset in place is something we want to be able to do going forward. The minute you back away from that principle, you're no longer able to assert it going forward. Well, whether that's true or not, that's the stance they're taking right now. And but he does follow up with this comment. He says, whatever you do echoes into eternity with player contracts. We just can't afford to take a step back, at least this early in the process. We're still a couple of weeks away from training camp. Well, he's kind of leaving it open that, well, 2 weeks to training camp, that's early, but 2 days to training camp, maybe we're going to say, okay, at this point in time, maybe we'll find a compromise. We need to get this guy in here. Look, Tennessee Titans, you don't draft a guy number 2 overall. You shouldn't be holdouts in today's NFL anymore. The contracts are slotted. If it's a holdup over this language, it seems silly to me for the reasons already stated. I mean, you're probably talking about a new regime. If Marcus Mariota falls flat on his face, the people calling the shots in Tennessee are going to be out in a few years anyway. That's the way it works if you have a colossal bust of a quarterback pick that high. I mean, we all said Dave Caldwell's future in Jacksonville is tied very closely to the success or failure of Blake Bortles. That's the way it is when you pick your franchise quarterback. Look what happened with Geno Smith. We know the story there. The success, if Blaine Gabbert had turned out to be Joe Flacco, right? Same body type, big guy, big arm. Hey, turned out to be that kind of a player on the field, you would have overlooked all of Geno Smith's missed draft picks because he hit on the quarterback. That's how important it is. Same thing in Tennessee with Mariota, but he's not under contract right now. So let's hope, at least I'm going to hope, that they dig in their heels, because I like the Tennessee Titans being at the bottom of the AFC South. I know a lot of you do, too. I hear that refrain from time to time. I don't care who they've got. I ain't scared to play them. I ain't scared. Doesn't matter. Well, that's fine. But in reality is, the fact of the matter, if your division rivals don't have their best player, certainly their quarterback, available to them, they're going to suffer for it on the field. And isn't that what you want as a fan, ultimately? Yeah, great. You can have them suffer at their full strength, but they're a lot more likely to be competitive if the guy that they handpicked to be their franchise quarterback is available from day one. Still might be. Still time before training camp opens up, but it's just odd in today's day and age now in the National Football League when you see entire draft classes signed a week after the draft. I think the Chicago Bears have their entire draft class signed within days after the draft this year, that Marcus Mariota is still kind of hanging out there with a little bit of uncertainty. Today's question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. You can weigh in on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Tyler as well. I'll ask you about specifically 3 of these unsigned franchise tag players: Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, and Justin Houston. Of course, Jason Pierre-Paul, Stephen Gostkowski are also, as we said, in that pool, but they're not in this question. The question is, out of those 3 top-level players, if you had your pick and you could add one to the Jaguar roster, which one would be the biggest benefit to the Jaguars? A high-end receiver, and then if so, which one? Or the guy who led the league with 22 sacks last year? Keeping in mind, Jason Pierre-Paul, we're going to eliminate him from the conversation like he eliminated his pointer finger. I know that's rough, but that's the facts of the matter. And I don't think anybody's going to make a case for the kicker from the New England Patriots, at least not with a straight face. So weigh in on that today. If you could add one of those franchise tag players to this roster, who'd make the biggest positive impact for the Jags? Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, and Justin Houston. I think we're on to a good question, because already in the first half dozen or so replies, we've got a mix of all three guys coming in. So we'll talk about that as we go along today. Spinner Howland's going to stop by with the Jacksonville Axemen. That's coming up a little bit later on this hour. Coming up next, though, Charles Davis of the NFL Network will get caught up on everything going on around the National Football League. Also, some interesting comments yesterday from Jim Fossil, former Giants coach, former Ravens coach, and Bill Polian, longtime NFL executive, as we know, with the Panthers and the Bills and the Colts most recently. Both of them weighing in on a potential developmental league that could be starting as soon as next spring. That is a direct, I guess, minor league feeder system for the National Football League. So we'll get into that as well a little bit later on this morning. Again, Wednesday's brought to you by Metro Rooter for all size plumbing jobs, in-home, commercial, industrial, you name it. Metro Rooter, the call to make at 695-1911 or visit MetroRooter.com. Charles Davis of the NFL Network joins us next. It's Jaguars Today, live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Two and a half weeks, it'll be here. Jags will be on the practice field on July 31st, open to season ticket holders, the first training camp practice of the 2015 season. From my view, can't get here soon enough. Mike Dempsey here with you. It is Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Talk to one of the best in the business right now. Charles Davis, lead Fox College football analyst. Also, you see him on the NFL, on Fox, on the NFL Network. He's all over the place. Does a great job on the draft. You can follow him on Twitter, at CFD22. And he joins us right here on 1010XL. Charles, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Mike. How about yourself?
Doing very well. Hey, listen, I got to ask you this, because looking over your Twitter feed, I see how much of a big reader you are. You're into all kinds of different stuff. Give our audience, we only have 2.5 weeks left now, Charles, for a lot of us until our lives are taken over by the National Football League. So give our audience, if they want a late summer reading list edition, give us the best book you've read recently that you'd like to recommend.
The Stranger by Harlan Coben, if you want fiction. Fantastic. The Book on Character by Brooks. Fantastic. If you want nonfiction, you know, and you want to try and get a little insight into ourselves and how we are, that's wonderful. And I just picked up the sequel, prequel, whatever you want to call it, to Kill a Mockingbird, Go Set a Watchman by Harper Lee, because I'm hearing so much buzz about it and so much quote unquote controversy about Atticus Finch's character. And I can't wait to read that, and I want to try and get that in before I have to dive strictly into preseason magazines, media guys, stats and everything else, which I know is coming and coming in a big way, and rightly so. And, you know, let's face it, I'm going to be doing some of that while I'm reading the other ones. But, yeah, those are just a few I would throw out at you. I mean, this time of year I do a lot of pleasure reading because everything is so high-pressured. What I call high pressure. Let's be honest, Mike. Reading about football and all that really shouldn't be high pressure. But for my job, I have to know these things. And you know, it's the same that you have to do to prepare for your job. So we feel a little bit of that. It doesn't compare to pressure that the people in our society have to feel. You know, the doctors and lawyers for big cases and teachers every day and all that. But, we get a little bit of that. But I love to just do pleasure reading and just kick back and let it flow through me.
Yeah, we know, Charles, that if the stuff ever hits the fan, our professions won't necessarily be deemed the most vital to society. I get what you're saying there. So
we understand. I think we say it as a qualifier, don't we, Mike? And I say it as a qualifier because it's a defensive, reflexive deal. We never want people to feel that what we do and how we view our jobs, that we take ourselves too seriously. Does that make sense? Because everyone
Absolutely.
At home just want to make sure, we just want to make sure, listen, all you great listeners out there, contributors, it is important. Otherwise, it wouldn't exist. But at the same time, we know it pales in comparison to what other people are doing, similar to what, you know, ESPN's doing with the ESPYs. They can criticize them all they want, but the money they raise for cancer research, I don't know how there can be any criticism at all of that.
Right. There's been the criticism on the whole Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce Jenner thing at the ESPYs.
Criticize that all you want.
Where do you come down on that? Do you think, I mean, does it really, I don't know why we get all that riled up about who wins an ESPY anyway. The award itself is not all that important, except maybe to the recipient. But like you said, ever since Jimmy V lit the world on fire with that speech, you know, they've done a tremendous job raising money in that regard.
They have, and I think what it comes down to, the Caitlyn Jenner controversy, I think, you know, more than anything is when we see those awards, and it's the Arthur Ashe Courage Award, you want to see things that are similar in the vein of what we're talking about. Arthur Ashe had a bad transfusion and was infected with the HIV virus, which turned into AIDS and ultimately killed him. So you're talking about a person with grace, dignity, character beforehand, now goes through that with grace, dignity, and character. And so the bar is set somewhere in that neighborhood. And for most of us who are watching it, and when I say most of it, I think people look at it and go, I want to be able to grab onto something like that. If they had said Lauryn Hill, the young basketball player who passed away, and they moved up the season for her, and she handled it with incredible aplomb and again, courage, in the face of death, I think everybody universally was stood up and applauded. When we're talking about transgender, that's not something we deal with every day. That's not something that we think about. That's something that we see as particularly courageous. But then think about if you've ever had anything in your life where you've been conflicted. Is this the right way to go, the wrong way to go? Am I happy with my life, unhappy with my life? Do I like who I am in this particular moment in time versus not? It's something that we just can't really relate to. And it does take a tremendous amount of fortitude. I'm going to use the word, not courage, but fortitude, because, you know, courage I try to reserve for those that, you know, military, Lauryn Hill, people like that. But fortitude and so much conflict, you know, so much is conflicting inside a person to go through that and go through it publicly. That, I think that takes more than we're probably giving it credit for. But to be frank with you, Mike, I wouldn't be sitting there jumping up and down thinking that's the right way to go on the award. It feels like pandering to me. But I understand why they're doing it. But I'm also not just totally dismissing it. I think I'd feel better about it if I hadn't read the quotes from Caitlyn Jenner about, hey, I've got to make money too. Okay.
Right.
I get you. That's one of those things, you know, that our parents taught us, Mike. Think it, don't say it.
Right.
You know, you didn't.
That's been my issue
there.
My whole life, Charles. I don't think
right?
Before I speak sometimes.
But I'll conclude with this. I think most of the public looks at that, and when they hear that comment, they go, hold up a second. Don't tell me you didn't make a mint off of that Kardashian TV show where everyone followed you guys around, and now you're talking about you need more money? I think that's where people are probably stuck. And what gets lost is it does take an incredible amount of fortitude and going through things and making that type of a change to go through something like that, because the same as anything else, and I'm not going to get into other stuff, but if things weren't so darn difficult, more people would do what they want to do. That's a very difficult choice that is being made there by Caitlyn Jenner, but I'm really not jumping up and down thinking that's the award I want to see Caitlyn Jenner getting, but that's just me.
Charles Davis here with us. You see his work on the NFL Network and a lot of other outlets. Charles, today, of course, as we move to some National Football League-related issues, franchise tag, deadline day to get a long-term deal done. We know there are five players out there, but the focus has been primarily on three guys, and that being Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, Justin Houston. We understand the situation with Jason Pierre-Paul and how that's changed after his fireworks accident. And then Steven Gostkowski, let's be honest, nobody's too concerned whether or not he gets a long-term deal, quite frankly, except maybe some Patriot fans. But what do you think, out of those three, any of those guys likely, or who is the most likely to get a deal done by 4 o'clock?
That's tough. Everyone seems to be stuck on things, you know. It always appears that, and then all of a sudden a move gets made. I'll rank them this way. I think that most likely to get something done before time, I'm going to say Demaryius Thomas. And the reason I say that is I feel like Denver's really under the gun. This is kind of this is the last roundup, you know, when it's Peyton Manning leading your football team. And I just don't think that they can afford not to come to some type of an agreement and get their top receiver back in the fold. This is not the time for total transition. So I think him won. Let's see, you said him, Justin Houston, and...
And Dez.
See, I think Dez with the Cowboys, I think the Cowboys are going to play it out a little bit more because I really, frankly, think the Cowboys don't believe a word he says about him not showing up. He doesn't have the leverage. They do. So he can bluff and bluster and do all the stuff he wants to. I don't think that the Cowboys believe it. So I think I would rank it 1, Thomas, 2, Houston, 3, Bryant. But I think ultimately all three will get done in some fashion or another, whether it's the tag or they come to an agreement. But I just don't believe for a second that Bryant, he can say he can sit down all he wants. He's not Emmitt Smith for them, although he's darn close with the way they're playing football nowadays. But I don't think they trust him the way that the old Cowboys trusted Emmitt Smith, if that makes sense.
Well, clearly they don't, because there's been talk of, much like the language that they put in cornerback Byron Jones' contract, Charles, that all the guaranteed money can go away. Basically, if he has any missteps, either with the league or the law, suspended, miss a rehab session when injured, even detained by the police, it seems a little excessive on some of these conditions with Byron Jones, but they obviously are close to the situation with Dez. He hasn't had any off-the-field trouble that we know of in the recent past, but he certainly has somewhat of a history with that. So it's pretty stringent what they're looking at putting in there if they do work out a deal with him.
And Mike, you know, you followed it for a long time. They've had a pretty good history, the Cowboys have, since Jerry Jones has been the owner, of dealing with and working with guys who may be a little bit, who color outside the lines a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Right? They've been the ones that have been okay with bringing in Adam Jones, Pac-Man, right? And what did they do with him? They gave him a 24-hour security person to be with him, right? He still got in trouble with the security guy standing right next to him.
Right.
So that's no cure-all. They've gone through same similar stuff with Dez. Dez had early on, they had people around him, the whole deal. And you and I both know that story last year about the Walmart incident that was caught on tape, you know, what, 3 years ago?
Right.
That doesn't get leaked by accident, now does it? There's a contract negotiation.
They're trying to put, well, just like, and I think Michael Irvin was dead on when he said yesterday, oh, all of a sudden we see a story yesterday about how good Terrence Williams looked this offseason. What
of
coincidence
course.
The timing that was on that deal, right?
Shocking.
Yeah.
Look, Mike, I'm stunned. I'm obviously flabbergasted that there's a receiver or two that actually looked really, really good in the offseason when they're about to deal with a top five in the league receiver and a guy who could make plays. And I'll put it to you this way. I'm not the biggest Dez Bryant fan in the world, okay, in terms of overall, and I would be very leery about an owner about making sure that I'm sitting down and saying, okay, how am I going to spend my money? But if you're talking about a football player who competes to the nth degree and is going to give you everything that he has and make spectacular great plays for you, Dez Bryant's your guy. I mean, let's be honest about it. You're crazy if you think that Dez Bryant isn't good enough to talk these type of numbers, which he is. And any fan who watched the game that wasn't a Green Bay Packers fan last year, and I grew up a huge Packers fan, so understand where I'm coming from. Even as a huge Packers fan, Dez Bryant made the catch. So, I mean, it's just, you know, by league rule and letter of the law, I understand why they took the catch away. But if you ask a football fan anywhere, if we were all in a bar somewhere, Mike, watching the game, before or after adult beverages, Dez Bryant caught the football.
That's kind of like the litmus test they used to say. If you want to judge who wins a boxing match, put a 5 or a 7-year-old ringside and just ask him after the fight who won the fight. And he'll tell you which guy got beat up more. And that's basically what it comes down to. Your gut tells you.
Charles Davis.
Yeah, Charles, let me get your thoughts. We like to, when we get some national guys passing through here on the show, to get your opinion of our franchise here in Jacksonville. You know, we get too close to the situation sometimes, and we see all the positive things that they're doing to try to build the roster and a culture that hopefully leads to a lot of winning and the game day improvements that this franchise has made and the commitment they've made. All that's great, but the fact is this team's won 9 games in the last 3 years. From your perspective, are they at least on the right path? Kind of, what do you watch from afar? What do you see when you look at this franchise from your vantage point?
Yeah, to me, there's no doubt in my mind they're on the right path. And I look at that all the way through. Organizational structure. I think they've got an owner who is committed and cares. His son, Tony, he does a great job behind the scenes in a lot of ways with the analytics and organizing things that way, actually took them in a direction faster than most franchises were going. I love Gus Bradley as a coach. I love Dave Caldwell as a GM. I think that they are connected very, very well in terms of player evaluation, putting together a roster, staffing, all of those things, which I think you need in today's NFL. I think it's very, very difficult for one person to do that job, you know, the old head coach, GM model. So you need those that work well in tandem. But you made the point, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, and I don't think that Dave or Gus would punch me for saying it. The results have to start being seen. It's the way it is in the NFL. It's not just the old days where, look, we have a five-year plan, grow with us. Okay, that sounded great then, but guess what? We look at other franchises who go down the tubes for a while, and in 1 year's time, they can spiral back up and be back in the playoffs. That makes people naturally impatient. That makes the Jaguars impatient. Like, hold a second, why did it work for them and not for us? Well, they want to start seeing results on the field. It's actually not a bad division to start having some results. I mean, it's not like Tennessee is light years away from them, right?
Okay. No.
Indianapolis, of course, is clearly the class of the division. But overall, within the division, Jacksonville ought to be able to start showing some movement and ability to compete. And I think that we're going to start seeing that. The quarterback played earlier last year than they wanted him to. But I frankly, and I've said it before and I'll stand by it, I don't know why they didn't play him from game one. I never understood the idea of we're gonna wait. What did he play? Game three? Game four?
Yeah. To me, that was
three lost weeks of getting him more experience and time. Look, Troy Aikman went through 1-15 with Dallas and ended up in the Hall of Fame. I understand worrying about my quarterback, worrying about him getting beaten up early, and I think it's understandable, and I think it's the right way to go. But these kids are so precocious nowadays. I mean, forget it. I just don't know that I would have waited. And I said it before. I say it now. I'll probably be, you know, Dave Caldwell will probably punch me upside the head, and he has every right to do so. But I just thought it was just lost weeks because it was just, you know, what were we waiting for? Let him go play. Because you weren't good at a threat for the Super Bowl anyway last year.
Well, you know, Dave wouldn't punch you. He'd get someone to do it probably, but he wouldn't do it
himself. Well, and someone would do it really, really well too. So I gotta be careful. Look, you guys know, I mean, you can tell by how I feel about this organization. I think they've done a magnificent job in putting all the right things in place in a place that players wouldn't mind going to and playing. I mean, to me, this is an excellent organization. They put the players first. They make all this work. They care about the community and the fans. I mean, they're putting in all types of improvements. They're doing all the right things. But it's a bottom-line league like anything else. They've got to start winning some football games. This is their opportunity to do so this year.
Now let's hope it comes sooner rather than later. Charles Davis, you catch him on the NFL Network. He's all over Fox. You should follow him on Twitter, as many do, at CFD22, and check out his reading list on there from time to time. He'll tweet about what he's reading and give you some good suggestions. And be like us. Take advantage of that downtime, what little there is left before the NFL season comes and it consumes all of our thoughts. Charles, always appreciate the time, man. Let's do it again soon, okay?
All right, look forward to it. Maybe I'll get up there and we'll see each other during training camp or something, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Love to see you, man. There he goes, Charles Davis with the NFL Network and NFL on Fox. And, of course, does a great job with college football and the draft as well. And love to see him out here during training camp. So a lot of good things to say about the organization. But as he said, I mean, it's pretty clear. It's a bottom-line league. Got to start winning games. I think everybody associated with the franchise realizes that. The question is how many this year. What is that number? Nobody will put a number on it, but maybe it's kind of like what we were talking about with a kid watching a sporting event. You'll just know it when you see it. Coming up next, Spinner Howland joins me here from the Jacksonville Axemen in studio, live at Everbank in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Wednesday's brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Oh, look at that. That's so stereotypical of Tyler Devitt right there. could have gone with a lot of groups right there.
Listen, am I supposed to say, by crikey, give me a Foster's and chuck a shrimp on the barbie right now?
Yeah, I think even most Americans are past the shrimp on the barbie stage.
I think so as well.
Although every time you call me, I do answer the phone, g'day.
Yeah, you do, actually.
So there's that.
Yeah, no, you do.
I'm trying to just give you a taste of home, man. I'm not trying to mock Australian culture. Far be it from me. I don't think I'd last a week in Australia.
Mate, you can mock us all you want.
You grow tough men down there in Australia, from what I understand.
We try to. We do try to.
Spinner Howland's here with us. Let me just get to the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line quickly here, Spinner, before we get into a little football talk. On Marcus Mariota, this one coming in. Am I wrong? I thought I heard something about them wanting to put in his contract that he couldn't surf, and being from Hawaii, it being a natural thing for him every day, he was refusing to have that included in his contract as well. That story was debunked. Apparently, Marcus Mariota, who is from Hawaii, doesn't even surf. And I actually thought that was kind of reasonable. If you were a big wave surfer out in Hawaii and you want to sign a top three contract in the NFL and get all that guaranteed money, I didn't think it was all that unreasonable if the Titans were going that way. But apparently that story was just, I don't know where it came from, but made up out of thin air. So to speak, but so that's not a factor in him not having his contract signed yet with the Tennessee Titans. Apparently the offset money is everything it comes down to at this point in time. If you want to weigh in today on the question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, which of the three primary franchise tag players that we've been discussing now for a while, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, and Justin Houston, would make the biggest positive impact on the Jags? If you could pick one of those guys, I know it's fantasy land, but it is July 15th, after all, and we're still waiting a couple of weeks on training camp to open up. Spinner, what's with this guy out in 49er camp, Jarryd Hayne, okay? To me, I'm like, oh, okay, he's a rugby dude trying to make it in American football. Apparently he's more than just a, quote, rugby dude, right? He is, what you tell me, among the top two or three rugby players in the world.
Mate, without a doubt. Look, Jarryd Hayne was, at one stage at least, for a very long period of time, arguably the one or two top rugby league player in the world. I mean, he's that good. He's legit. He's that once in a generation athlete that comes along that has all the attributes. He's big. He's strong. He's fast. He's elusive. I mean, he's a massive man. He has fantastic footwork, and he truly does have NFL quality speed when he gets moving. And you've got to remember, mate, that the code of rugby that he plays, so rugby league, the 13-man code, is essentially American football sped up. It's basically, it's hurry-up offense where you take your sets of plays and you put them into you take your plays and put them in a set of six downs. And you say, look, mate, you've got six downs to score. So he is familiar with kind of the style of the repetitive play set. It's just that, all right, now he gets, you know, 35 seconds between each play. He is a legit chance. And, yes, I know the playbook for him will be extremely hard to get through. An NFL playbook, especially in the position that he's trying to make, is a lot for him to learn. It is not, you know, no offense to the lineman. He's not standing there. Sort of just, he really does have to think. But his natural attributes in what he does when he gets hold of the football really could make him... I would think the ultimate position for him would be punt returner. I think that's where he'll probably get on the paddock first. Maybe at a running back. I don't know. The concept of getting away from the open field and learning how to run behind a blocker is extremely hard to break. I know that from personal experience. When I first come to Jacksonville, there was a semi-pro team here, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go and have a crack at this American football. And as much as we practiced, when it come to game time, when they put me out for the first, I think, 7 minutes as a running back, I instantly run out from behind the blockers because it was instinctual to not run behind a blocker. You just sort of want to find your own crease. If he can get over that habit, I think it'll be okay. But as an open field punt returner, the guy's a little... I mean, look, mate, everyone's done it, right? Get on Google and Google Jarryd Hayne's NRL highlights. The guy is... I mean, he's a freak athlete. And he's very freaky at what he does. I really do rate him as, if there's anyone that comes from the sport of rugby league and the National Rugby League in Australia that has a crack at making it, I think he's the guy.
Really do. You make a good point. You want a guy like that in a position like that is more instinctual. And I've never had really thought about the transition from more of kind of a free-flowing attitude towards carrying the football to everything in the NFL is so structured. Every play, you hear coaches talk about it all the time, Spinner. we were all, 8-10 guys were in position. Why'd you give up the 80-yard touchdown? Well, that one guy hit the wrong gap. It's just, you know, and that's, it's so much about you being in the place you're expected to be and nobody performing, you know, outside that. Now, you do have guys that play above the X's and O's, as they like to say, but even those guys are encouraged to stay within the structure as long as possible until you get to that point where you can let your natural ability take over. So that's something I wouldn't have thought of, you know, just that that willingness and instinct or, you know, just the ability to run behind those blockers like that.
Yeah, mate, it is instinctual. Obviously, in our in all rugby codes, you can't run behind someone. There's no blocking. You can't block a defender for a ball carrier. So the instinctual side of that, to now completely change everything you know and actually do something in our game that is that's illegal. You can't run behind a guy that, you know, it's called obstruction. Look, mate, you can't get behind a guy like that. But in the open field play where he's catch the ball and get as many yards upfield, whether it's a sidestep, whether it's your speed, whether it's your power, whatever it is, just go forward as many yards as you possibly can. I think that he has the natural attributes to be very good at that.
Axemen, big one this weekend, right?
Yeah, mate. Look, the Axemen are at home. Very uncharacteristic of the team to get off to a slow start this year. Obviously, they did lose a number of player personnel, not only guys that had retired. A couple of the import players went back to Australia. And a number of players, due to the expansion, had moved down to Central Florida. And the Central Florida Warriors benefited from that.
Those sons of...
Yeah, those people from DeLand. No one likes them.
No one likes anyone from DeLand. Trust me, I know.
Yes. So, yeah, mate, they're home. A must-win. If there's any chance of getting a home playoff game, the Central Florida Warriors come up here. So it is essentially guys that have played together. It's essentially teammate on teammate at this point. I think the Warriors have... 9 former Axemen players on their roster.
Wow.
Yeah, there's certainly plenty of bad blood there once the kickoff whistle starts. But if they want a home playoff, they've got to win this weekend. And that's the whole focus. And it goes back to that home game regular season record that the Axemen are so proud of. It was the last time during regular season that a team come to UNF and beat the Jacksonville Axemen was 2008. That's a pretty impressive home field, home game regular season record to be a part of. So
that's pretty outstanding, which highlights the
7 years
desire to get that home playoff game, obviously.
Yeah, mate, it's everything together. And again, it comes down to how the leaders on a team handle pressure. You can look at this as there's a lot of pressure on the guys that are leading the younger players, leading the rookies, making the calls on the field where they get a bit panicked by everything. Or you can embrace that as your motivation.
All right, we got Spinner Howland here with us, who's the Mr. Everything, Chief Cook and Bottle Washer with the Jacksonville
Axemen. That's exactly what I am at the moment.
That's what I kind of, you know, like to refer to you as. You're going to stick around a little
bit.
Yeah, mate. All right, we'll talk a little football, we'll talk a little rugby. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the way to do it. Question of the day, which of the three primary franchise tag players, Justin Houston, Demaryius Thomas, Dez Bryant, would make the biggest positive impact if you could magically place one on the Jaguar roster? Which one of those three would you prefer to have? We've got this date in football history coming up, the Honda drive around the NFL, and more with Spinner Howell and Mike Dempsey here live at Everbank. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Couple of birthdays on this date in football history. Starting back in 1935, Alex Karras, born on this date. He passed away in 2012 at the age of 77. Known to one generation as an NFL player, primarily with the Detroit Lions, a four-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro as a defensive tackle. Also as an actor, Blazing Saddles, Webster. I'm going to get in a lot of trouble with people out there. I tell you that Blazing Saddles is one of the most overrated movies in the history of cinema. All right, I say the word cinema because it seems more lofty that way, Spinner. But I'm not a big Blazing Saddles guy. In fact, I'm debating whether or not to do a Friday Top 5 on your 5 most overrated movies of all time. Anything leap to mind? I just got hit with something by Fortunato, I think, for not respecting Blazing Saddles enough.
Mate, yep. It's a classic, and I don't care where you're from, what part of the at least the English-speaking world. I don't know if they dubbed that one For international audiences with foreign languages, but mate, it's Blazing Saddles. Come on!
I hear you. What can I tell you? It's all my list, by the way, of overrated movies. Practically all comedies. You know, number one might be The Jerk by Steve Martin.
It's pretty funny.
One of the dumbest movies ever
but
made.
Funny.
One of the dumbest movies ever made. Moving on. Born on this date, 1967, July 15th. Former Jaguar Pro Bowler, only here for 1 year, Carnell Lake. Came in as a safety primarily from the Pittsburgh Steelers, five-time Pro Bowler, and one-time first-team All-Pro appearance. Made the Pro Bowl in 99. I walk by his picture on the Jaguars Pro Bowl Wall of Fame every day when I leave the studio. So not a whole lot else going on as we march towards the opening of training camp, but that is what's going on from this date in football history. Brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Whether you need roofing for your house, for your business, repairs, re-roofs, you can call today and get a free estimate at 287-7756, license number CCC-056797 for First Coast Roofing. That is this date in football history.
Now drive around the NFL.
Well, guys, an update on the Aaron Kromer story. The Buffalo Bills offensive line coach has been placed on indefinite paid administrative leave after his arrest this past weekend. ESPN has been told by the Walton County Sheriff's Office that they are also pursuing a misdemeanor battery charge against his son, Zachary, who was also at the scene. No court date set for the Bills coach. Jason Pierre-Paul is out of the South Florida hospital. JPP still yet to sign his nearly $15 million franchise player tender. ESPN's Ed Werder reported yesterday that Pierre-Paul is unlikely to sign anything until he is healthy. The deadline for franchise players to sign a multi-year deal is 4 p.m. today, and after that, JPP could only sign a one-year deal. Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, and Justin Houston, also a few guys looking to get their deals wrapped up by today's 4 p.m. deadline. And finally, the commissioner said last week that he expected or to have a ruling, or the sources near the commissioner says they expect him to release the ruling by the end of the week on Tom Brady. The NFL Players Association is expected to contest the results of Brady's appeal in federal court if any of the four-game suspension remains. Union sources told ABC News' Ryan Smith, if the NFLPA does challenge the appeal verdict in court, it will argue the ball deflation policy was incorrectly applied to Brady, and also against the general awareness standard that Ted Wells talked about in his Wells report to determine Brady's involvement. That's all I have for the drive around the NFL.
You know, is there any doubt that they misapplied the standard? Because every time he gets challenged, Roger Goodell is over. He's gotten them all overturned, everyone that's been challenged on the basis of he's gone too far in his authority. You thought I was looking for something to write on.
Yeah, I did. You were sitting there with a pen waving it around on a wall.
See, I'm holding that one finger off. I'm pantomiming the fact that Jason Pierre-Paul is not going to sign his franchise tenders because he has to relearn how to use his hand. He can't sign the paper right now. Okay? I'm just thinking it's probably difficult to redo.
Mate, on that note, and I know I brought it up right before we went on air, that we've come up with a great idea for the Axeman. We know our fans want a bit more, so we've decided that every time an Axeman player scores, we're going to have fireworks. But we're going to have the player that scores actually set the fireworks off. So that'll bring a new impact to the...
Right,
see?
Do you really want to get that across the touchline? I don't know.
Hey, listen, you have to take a bottle rocket and you have to hold it in your hand and let it fire off the air. What a spectacular...
Yeah, it seems like a great idea. What could possibly go wrong?
Nothing.
With that?
It's only fireworks. It's not like it's a mini explosive device.
Are we going straight to Hades for Bach and Jason Pierre-Paul? Less than 2 weeks out. I don't know. I kind of think no.
You know, was it? It's funny. We were talking about this the other day. Were there a few beers involved? And I don't know the full story of exactly what happened.
You know, he had a van load of fireworks.
I know, but
see the picture of the van load?
Yes, but was it a case? Was he there with a couple of mates? And his mate, I mean, I may or may not have been guilty of trying to pull the same prank if I was in that situation, of lighting one up and really quickly going, here, mate, hold this. I mean, just for a giggle.
Do you have friends like that? I mean, is this a rugby condition?
Yeah, not anymore. But
got
a lot of one-arm fellas.
Right. Hey, hold this, and they'll actually take that from you.
With enough beers, you just put your hand out and hang on to it.
Yeah, all right. There you go. I could actually see that. At least that's kind of the legend of the tough man rugby guy that you guys have tried that.
We'll keep going on with that.
Don't close your hand around it. We know that.
Oh, right? We like to let him off in our teeth, mate. Come on.
You probably do. That's probably why you don't have many of your own. This stat for Pro Football Focus, Sam Monson tweeting this out. Quarterbacks and their quarterback rating, when they're not facing pressure, versus when they are facing pressure, and ranking them by the difference between the two. Only two quarterbacks in the entire National Football League had a positive differential, meaning that they actually performed better according to quarterback rating, which can be a flawed statistic, certainly, but based on that measure, that were actually better under pressure than when they were in an unmolested pocket. Ben Roethlisberger, it's shocking how much better he is actually to me when you consider he had a quarterback rating without pressure of 98.4. That's pretty good for any quarterback to have for the entirety of his season. But under pressure, he goes up to 112.2. It's absolutely ridiculous, Spinner. There's only one or two guys even in the 90s. He is so much better under pressure because, as we talked about for years, he almost invites it in because he'll have two or three guys hanging on him. That's two or three fewer defenders that are in coverage out there, and he is strong enough to shake these guys off, big enough to see over the defense and still deliver the ball down the field. So, in a way, the more guys you send and get a hand on Ben Roethlisberger, the better it's been for him.
Mate, I absolutely agree, and I think anybody would disagree that Ben Roethlisberger is one of the tough guys in the league. He doesn't mind getting hit. He doesn't mind being belted around at the quarterback position, and he is a big man. For a quarterback, he is a very big guy. So he's so focused, and I know I said to you earlier, I equate that to a boxer that is so focused on his own punches, his own punch combination, that he's prepared to weather a couple of jabs going into a combination to deliver the combination he wants. All right, you tag me two or three times as I'm walking into you, but I'm going to get that shot off that I want. And I think Roethlisberger plays the game like that. He thrives on the contact. He thrives on the fact that he is kind of that model tough guy that's left in the league, the quarterback that's willing to stand there. And you're absolutely right. If you can, quote, milk a couple of guys out of their position to get at you, you open up more offensive players that you can deliver the ball to. It's simple numbers. I'm going to have three guys on me, which means that there's two vacant spots somewhere on the field for me to throw the football to. And if I'm big enough and tough enough to do that, then why wouldn't I do that?
And he's proven to be that throughout the entirety of his career. We look at Jay Cutler and we think this guy is not good in any circumstance, that he's an interception machine. Actually, his quarterback rating was pretty decent regardless, with no pressure, 87.5, which is not astronomical. There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL that when they have a pressure-free pocket, their quarterback rating soars over 100. But he actually improved as well under pressure, went up into the low 90s. He's the only other quarterback other than Roethlisberger to actually improve with guys in his face. Blake Bortles, where is he? People want to know. Well, they don't. You're right. This ranks 39 quarterbacks that qualified for enough starts in the National Football League. Blake, his quarterback rating with no pressure last year was 84.9. So that doesn't sound
that
bad. It's not horrible. But when you look at this list, I think that's the lowest, with the exception of Zach Mettenberger, who was at 84.5. So just a couple of rookies. He trailed everybody else in that category, but still not horrible. You know, a reasonable number, and as a rookie, you can understand that that's probably going to rise in the future. Now, the problem is, when pressured last year, Blake's quarterback rating dropped to 22.9. I mean, so far below any other QB on this list, and a drop of 62 points in his ranking, which is second only to Charlie Whitehurst. Whitehurst fell further because his QB record quarterback rating without pressure was well into the 100s, and he didn't fall as far as Blake. But regardless, throw Whitehurst out of the picture. Blake Bortles way down there, which is kind of concerning when you consider the state of the offensive line, at least last year, and how many sacks that he took and how much pressure he was under. Maybe a little less concerning when you look one spot further up on the list and realize the next biggest drop in QB rating came from Tom Brady.
Yeah, mate, but I don't see that as an unusual statistic at all, and I think that it's the way that the league is going. We all know it's a quarterback-driven league, and we know that the type of quarterback or the type of stats, the type of play that scouts, that general managers, that coaches are looking for in what their quarterbacks are able to do. When was the last time you actually said, we have a running quarterback? Let's go get a quarterback that can actually get out and do something on his own on a consistent basis and build a game plan around that. There is so much focus now put on the offensive line. You want guys to be able to protect you. How many times do you hear it? Protect the quarterback, create the pocket and make the pocket withstand pressure for as many seconds as possible. That is the two biggest things that I, as an outsider, look, I'm by no means an expert in the NFL or coaching, other than I see that. I want a quarterback that, if needed, can stand in the pocket and is not afraid of that shadow pressure, but I want an offensive line that can make the pocket withstand pressure for as long as possible to give my guy the chance he needs to get the ball downfield. Where it is a passing league, it is a quarterback league, so let's focus on the type of quarterback we want and the type of offensive line we want to protect him. You're not going out getting the Ben Roethlisbergers anymore. If a guy has that attribute, fantastic. You'll get away with it. I go back, and I'm by no means do I think that he was a Roethlisberger probably level guy, but Byron Leftwich, mate, he was belted around his entire career, but he was kind of at least that tough guy. He knew, look, I'm going to get hit, but I'm still going to try and get rid of the ball. It's just kind of a part of the job. I don't think they look for that as a true attribute in quarterbacks anymore. I just don't think that that's a part of a high level of what their expectation of a quarterback is.
I think what they want a guy who, look, they don't want the quarterback to get hit, period, but they want a guy who's not going to flinch with the pressure. Leftwich sometimes took it to an extreme because he held it so long, and he had such a wind-up delivery that pressure that got close ended up getting to him as he released the football. He probably took more big hits over his college career and his NFL career based on the similar amount of snaps as a lot of guys do. One thing you couldn't knock about Byron was his toughness, but you don't want that toughness on display week after week after week if you're a quarterback in the NFL. I think with Blake, you expect him to get better just because he's going to get better. He's going to get more comfortable. His mechanics are going to get tightened up. He's going to have better people around him at the skill positions. But I think the biggest way to improve that number is to not let him face pressure as much, as we talked about. They brought in three guys, one of which will definitely start at right tackle, and Jeremy Parnell. A lot of people think Wisniewski will win that center spot. And A.J. Cann, I don't think that they set out to target him, but he kind of fell into their lap, so better competition on the offensive line hopefully results in better play on the offensive line this year, and Blake Bortles not facing nearly as much pressure as he did last year when he got sacked 55 times in 13 starts. Spinner Howland with the Jacksonville Axemen in studio with me. Mike Dempsey here with you. Tyler Devitt along as well. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday, and we will continue live at EverBank in a moment. Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along on this Wednesday, brought to you by Metro Rooter. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Metro Rooter on hand for any size plumbing job you need. Anywhere in Northeast Florida, they're going to take care of you. I've had them in my house. I don't trust everybody. I trust this business. I tell you what, you don't want to have plumbing issues, but part of life sometimes, especially as a homeowner, you got to deal with it. Metro Rooter is on the job for you. 695-1911, serving Jacksonville since 1978 with the right people, the right equipment, same-day service, weekends included, everything from in-home, your business, industrial plumbing, septic systems, restaurant grease trap service. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter is the solution for you. Visit them at metrorooter.com or call 695-1911 for our Wednesday sponsor, Metro Rooter, here on Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey with Spinner Howland in studio down here at EverBank. Tyler Devitt spinning the hits today as well. Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide on hand today. Today is the Tide's Day at SEC Media Days, which is ongoing. Frank Frangie and David Lamb, among others from 1010XL, that outstanding coverage over the last couple days. That will continue today. But speaking at the podium today, Nick Saban said he would like to see the NFL advisory board give out draft grades later in the process than they do right now. Because last year the grades came out on December 15th, and according to Saban, he said he had underclassmen on his team that basically went into protect my financial future mode and not concern themselves so much about winning football games. That's the inference. He said they played not to get hurt, ran out of bounds in the team's loss to the Buckeyes rather than take a big hit. That's directly challenging the manhood of some of these guys, isn't it? I mean,
without a doubt.
You know, you're saying, hey, this guy's basically afraid. He's afraid of the injury factor here. He's not playing tough anymore. He's not playing the football that got him to this point.
Are you here for the team or here for yourself, son?
Right. Well,
what are you here for? And in an open conversation, he'll tell you he's here for the team. But when you put him in a situation like that, when the pressure's on, in the back of his mind, he's thinking the cash register's bell is going off here. I'm going to run out of bounds.
I really wonder how much, though, that date. If you're a guy, if you're Amari Cooper, you know what your draft stock is.
You know okay? if you're going.
Right.
Yes.
You're today's day and age, kids are so plugged in. My kid, I can't get anything past a kid, okay? We're both in all the superhero movies, right? So I don't want to break it to him. I'd already seen the Batman versus Superman trailer, right? So I've seen it. So he dials it up on the iPad. He goes, Daddy, check this out. It's Batman versus Superman. So we watch a trailer together. I don't spoil the surprise, but I try to point out a couple of things because I've read some stories on some things. I said, you know, such and such. He goes, I know. He knows it all. He's on there constantly studying. It's all at these kids' fingertips these days, Spinner, and that's a good thing, I think, overall. But Amari Cooper's no dummy. He knows what it's been said about him. He's a Biletnikoff Award winner. He knows he's a top 10 pick, if not higher. And so I don't know if he gets a grade from the NFL that says, hey, you're definitely a top, you know, half of the first round kind of guy. He already knew that going in. Maybe for some of the fringe guys whose stock was higher than they expected, maybe they go into that mode. But I'd like to know who he's talking about. Is he talking about T.J. Yeldon? Who the Jaguars drafted in the second round.
Mate, it's not the coach and it's not the player. I look at the outside influence. And you know that you're going to – look, you and I have talked about this. You either have it inside you or don't. You're either a tough guy or you're not. You're going to be the guy that says, no matter what happens, I'm going to play this game the best of my ability at all times and try and win, no matter what the personal injury potential is to myself. Even if you're that kind of guy, but you're playing at that level high school, that level college football, and you know you're going to the NFL, you know you have a number of people that you will also talk to, whether it's friends, whether it's family members, whether it's the new agent you might have just had a talk to, whether it's someone that's had a chat to you about potential deals, about sponsorships when you get in the NFL, and they're in your ear already. They're already there. They're telling you, listen, did you see the draft rankings that come out? Do you see where you are? I know your coach is going to tell you, but and I know you're a tough guy, but you've got to at least pay a bit of attention. Think about your future. Think about the money. It only takes one little injury. So we're not telling you to not play your best, but, you know, just maybe have that in the back of your mind and slowly. And if you hear that from one, two, three people that are influential outside of your coach and outside of your teammates, it starts to wear on your mind. And you start playing a game where could I go from a lot of millions to, well, if I get a little injury, is it not going to be a lot of millions?
And Spinner, what do you tell every Axeman player over the years, and what has every coach ever told you? You're more likely to get hurt when you start thinking,
when you
start
don't play at 100%, you're going
right?
to get hurt.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely,
so,
without a doubt.
That, you know, that's kind of the situation, I think, that he's looking at here. And keep it in mind, the NFL Advisory Board is a lot more of a substantive kind of thing for these guys to hear. I'm not suggesting that every player's in Amari Cooper's situation. He may be an extreme example because your buddies are all telling you, oh, you can go to the league, right? And maybe your family's telling you, you can go to the league and all that. And maybe Mel Kiper's telling you, you can go to the league and you're going to be this. But the guys who really know, the advisory board is more plugged in than all these guys. They have the ear and they listen as well to the decision makers around the National Football League. So they're going to give you a better reflection of kind of the range you're probably likely to come off the board. But still, there's a lot of info out there.
A coach's biggest support group while they're telling the player the same thing the coach is telling him is his peers and his support system. His biggest nightmare is that same group of people now telling them something other than what he's telling them. It's a good and it's a bad. And as a high-level college football coach in the U.S. where you've got guys that you know are going into the league, the minute they release a statistic like that, all of a sudden you know, all right, now I've got to reel these guys in. Now I've got to keep them focused. Now I've got a guy that knows he's going. He knows where he's going to be drafted, or at least he thinks he knows. He's going to have all these support people, this peer group around him, tell him how fantastic he is, and to focus on something else. That's a nightmare as a coach. It really is.
From the NFL's perspective, college football is a wonderful free.
That's free minor league.
It's a free developmental system for them. So they're very loath to really push back on much of anything, you know, and create any negative impression because what's the benefit to them, right? They benefit so much from the system set up the way it is. I found it interesting though yesterday that a couple of guys, former head coach Jim Fossil, of the Giants, saying during an interview on SiriusXM NFL Radio, quote, don't be surprised if there was a very good spring league opening next year in the NFL. He's saying basically a minor league system. Something, now I'm not suggesting this would be an alternative to college because the NFL doesn't allow you into the league until you're 3 years removed from your high school graduating class. I would assume any developmental league would have the same rules because, again, they're not trying to kill the golden goose over here, which is college football. But they're looking for a system where we've got these guys coming in, and they're not ready for the NFL. There's only so many reps in the off season, and once you get to the season, guys who aren't a factor in that week's game plan are getting limited repetition. It's very difficult for those guys to improve their game to the point where, especially quarterbacks.
XFL 2.0.
Right. Well,
coming to you
next spring. But if the way he is suggesting it, he says opening next year in the NFL, if it's the XFL was its own independent thing, that has some wild ideas, such as Tom McManus. You know, shout out to your former co-host out there, Tommy. I love Tommy, man. He's listening right now. I bet you. He'll probably text me in about 2 seconds. But this sounds more like a 6-team minor league developmental system, much like NFL Europe, but probably in the States. So anyway, Fossil brings that up, and then later in the same day, Bill Polian, also going on Sirius XM NFL Radio, says that the quality of our game has suffered because there is not a developmental league. He was not asked specifically about this, and he wasn't making a prediction that there'll be a league, but I found the timing very curious that these two figures would bring this up on the same afternoon. He said, particularly for young quarterbacks, particularly for young offensive linemen, particularly for young defensive linemen, especially 3-4 defensive linemen, there's a crying need for a developmental league. And he also said, you know, the rise of spread offenses in college has made that even tougher because you have fewer quarterbacks playing in the type of football system that they're going to want them to play in the National Football League. So here you've got two pretty big-name guys that are pretty plugged in. One of them saying, hey, don't be surprised if we see this next spring. And then Polian going on to basically tout the need for exactly what we're talking about here. So you wonder, will we see some kind of developmental league? Think about it right now, Spinner. Most of the National Football League has been shut down for a few weeks, right? Everyone's got some time off. Who knows? Spring league that goes into the summer, the NFL's always looking to fill every little crevice on the sporting calendar year-round.
Without a doubt.
It's the only time of the year that they're a little bit depressed in terms of grabbing the headlines. But even today, franchise tag deadline day, right? So you could have some big news coming up this afternoon that we'll be talking about. Training camp will be here in a couple weeks. And once you get to the beginning of August, they're off and running once again. So can they get a true tangible benefit from developing some of these players that aren't quite ready for the league yet? But at the same time, can they fill in some of those gaps in the year-long cycle of covering the NFL? Well, they'd like nothing better.
I'll preface this by saying the rugby league side of me and the USA Rugby League and the Jacksonville Accident side of me doesn't like the idea because we deliberately play in the summer so we don't compete with the NFL. Because the only opportunity we ever have, for me sitting here with you right now, is because there's very little to talk about in the NFL, especially in a city like Jacksonville that has no other major sporting franchises. So for us, it's at least a chance to get a little bit of media somewhere, somehow. However, from a coach and a administrator of a league, absolutely. The NFL really could use this developmental league. I absolutely agree with that. It's a great way to evaluate players. Look, guys on the practice squad, are you really developing them in any way, shape, or form other than just have them run through the motions? They're not. I understand the process. I understand the system. But if you truly want to find out, have you got a player that really could be of value to any of the teams in the NFL, put them out there and let them play games.
You ultimately have to see them in a game situation. Otherwise, you know, guys like that are long shots because the investment is not there from the team to get those guys to put them in a position. The stability, the job security of coaching staffs is not such that you can just take a wild chance and play this guy. Guy like Kurt Warner, this example has been cited many times. Jake Delhomme as well, played in NFL Europe, basically proved their worth, and even then it still took a little bit of time for them to get a crack, but at least you had some game film on these guys in a professional setting with coaches running NFL-style offenses. So something to keep an eye on, certainly.
You bring up a perfect point there, watching the game film. So this past Sunday, we had the 23 top players from all four teams in the Southern Division of our league come to a combine and a camp for consideration to go into the player pool for the national team. In our sport, the elite level you could ever want to play at, you get to go and play for your nation in international competition. The difference in these players with drills, with skills, is so minute. From the top guy to the bottom guy, those 23, is almost nothing. So what do you do? What do you do as a coach? You go, as selected, you go back to the film and you watch how the guy reacts in situations during the game. Is he tough? Does he do the stuff that he does in practice in pressure situations? You have to put them in real game-like situations if you truly want to know anything about a guy.
Coming up, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight. We'll also get to all the latest, and there's so much going on with the Axemen. There's always something that you've got your fingers in, so many different pies out there that you're cooking up for the Jacksonville Axemen and the rugby scene on the North Florida area here. So we'll get into that coming up, Spinner. But the question of the day today, asking people on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, to reply, which of the three primary guys that we've been looking at with the franchise tag applied, if you could pick one in fantasy land and add him to the Jaguar roster, would make the biggest impact? Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, so two high-end receivers, and you could pick your poison there, or Justin Houston, the NFL sack leader from last year, and a lot of people weighing in on all those guys and making some pretty strong cases, so we'll get to that coming up. By the way, Ian Rappaport saying today that the Cowboys have increased their offer to Dez Bryant. We were talking, I think, off the air that he is, if he just played under the franchise tag for the next couple of years, he'd make about $28 million.
Right.
Okay. So they initially offered him a long-term contract earlier in the offseason, 6 years, $10 million per, 6 years, $60 million. He's going to look, then he's going to say, wait, I can make an average of $14 million over the next 2 years if I do nothing. Right. And most of that's locked in. If I don't get hurt, that's practically a guarantee I'll get that money. So why would I take a deal that averages $10 million? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Rappaport says the Cowboys have increased their offer to Dez to an annual average beyond $13 million and reports that Bryant is more optimistic than ever that a deal will get done. So, hey, look, in the end, money talks, right? Whether him threatening to miss regular season games is having an impact on this negotiation or not, Michael Irvin suggested they'd go from 12-4 to 8-8 without Dez Bryant. I don't know if he's necessarily wrong when you consider they've lost the heart of the running game in DeMarco Murray. Yes, they have that offensive line. It's going to be a lot easier to stack eight men in the box against Joseph Randall if Dez Bryant's not on the football field.
I absolutely agree.
So
they need him.
We'll keep an eye on that one and see if anything gets done by the 4 o'clock deadline to extend a long-term contract offer, to get a long-term contract deal done with these guys. And, of course, Jason Pierre-Paul, we know the long-term offer is off the table. And Steven Gostkowski, the underappreciated franchise kicker for the New England Patriots. We'll pass on breaking him down. Coming up next, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight. More with Spinner Howland here live in studio at Everbank Field. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We continue along. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. Mike Dempsey here with you. Spinner Howland joining me in studio. Thanks to Charles Davis of the NFL Network for jumping on board a little bit earlier today. Just got that idea in my head now. Now I want to give a call to Tommy Mack, see if he wants to stop by tomorrow. I don't know what he's up to today.
He's doing well. Spoke to him the other day, Mike.
I know he is. He's doing very well. He was a hit. He came in and sat in with me, I want to say in the spring. It was sometime after football season wrapped up, and it was a big hit. Thought we were going to rebrand the Rumble there for a brief minute.
Mate, bring it back. Hey, the two of you are the reason. Okay, you know that. It was at that old, what was that old studio?
That was Enterprise Park.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mate, that was it. That's where it all started.
The launching pad for the Axemen and all the glory that would come. How many championships? How many league championships for the Axemen?
Two national championships, both of them undefeated seasons.
Two national championships.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It's not bad.
It's not shabby.
And been in the national championship five of the last six seasons.
Now,
not too bad.
You've given me a slew of Axemen-related notes here. I'd just like to highlight a couple of these coming up. We mentioned the game this weekend, a big one versus the Orlando Warriors coming up.
Yep.
So kind of a must-win situation practically, right?
I mean, it is a must-win.
Certainly, yeah. To get that home playoff game. The Southern Conference championship game, locked in for Jacksonville, right?
Yes, locked in. August 15th.
That's coming up on August 15th. A bid is in to host the national championship game.
The league was very impressed here last year with the event we put on, and they invited us to bid again.
Do you feel like, I mean, you have a very strong chance here?
It'll be us or one other team. It's down to two teams at this point.
Okay.
So I like our chance.
Happy with your positioning
on
that. Yep,
nodding a wink on that one.
Nodding a wink. Spinner, you don't have to read too much between the lines with Spinner sometimes. One thing that I think is cool, among the things that you've been able to do in growing the profile of rugby here on the First Coast and really in this country, is the national team and the Axemen's connection with the national team. Are we going to see some guys make a run, or are we going to see some Axemen legacies on the U.S. national team?
There was a list come out today after the training camp, the combine on Sunday. I was emailed a list from the selection panel, a 35-player pool. So you narrow it down to that 35, and from that there'll be 20, 21 guys. And I can confirm, I don't want to give out any names at the moment because I haven't actually let the players know in the South who are on it, but I can tell you that there were two Axemen players on that pool.
Nice.
They're in it. And a number of others, I think there was 9 or 10 across the 4 teams from the South that have been added to the U.S. national team player pool, which for them is... that can change. A guy falls out of form, he gets bumped out, someone else gets bumped in. A guy gets injured, obviously you're facing those things as well. But at the moment, there's 9 or 10 guys from across the South who they have their name in the hat to represent the United States.
All right, for people, a lot of people like me who don't follow the sport worldwide, you know, certainly I don't follow international soccer, but when the United States is playing,
Of course you do.
I put my colors on, I root for the World Cup team, I watch every game of the Ladies World Cup, you know, I love that stuff. So I'll certainly be doing that with Team USA as well. So tell me why it's a big deal that Brian McDermott is going to be the coach here.
Mate, Brian McDermott is the head coach of the Leeds Rhinos. So first of all, you've got that connection between the Leeds Rhinos continually coming to Jacksonville for preseason training camp each year. The Leeds Rhinos play at the elite level. I mean, they play at the top level in the European Super League. Brian's taken them to 2 national championships, which is essentially like winning 2 Super Bowls. It's the same equivalent. And he is going to come and be the head coach of the USA national team, a developing nation in the sport. It would be exactly like taking Tom Coughlin and having him go and coach a team in the CFL. That is the level. And call it a mismatch if you want, but from the US, that's a coup. To have a coach of that level, that talent, and the familiarity that he has with seeing the US guys play. The US Pioneers, which is our developmental team, played the Leeds Rhinos when they were here. So he got to see the level the domestic players are at. He got to interact with them. He got to see the athleticism in the US athletes. And he now knows a lot more about them. How do I mold these guys into fantastic rugby league players? So for us, I think Brian McDermott is the absolute number one choice. It couldn't have worked out any better for him to accept. And credit to him volunteering his time to come and do that.
You've got a couple of notes here. One, that a bid has been submitted to host World Cup qualifiers in Jacksonville and DeLand.
Yep.
The 2 favorite places. In December, and you're confident about that. And that the Rugby League World Cup will be in 2017 in Australia and New Zealand. And if the USA beats Jamaica and Canada in December, they'll earn a berth in that. Is this a 4-year cycle? Because I'm just interested because a caller just called in and told Tyler that he is actually headed to the Rugby World Cup, and then he's going to go to the Jaguars-Bills game in London. So is that a different World Cup? Is that, you know, you've got Union, you've got League, or
yes,
are there different World Cups for
that? Yeah, exactly. I mean, two completely different sports. Rugby Union is the 15-man code of the sport. And look, this is the big problem. When the codes split, they had Rugby Union, which is the official name of the game, and Rugby League. The two worst names you could ever call a sport. You know, you're playing a league or a union. It's insane. I get it. So the 15-man code of rugby has their World Cup later this year.
Gotcha.
The 13-man code Rugby League, the World Cup is in 2017. And yes, they both rotate alternatively on 4-year cycles.
We like to call that the good one. The one in 2017. Yeah,
that's
the good
exactly
one.
What we like to
call
it.
That's the good one. That's
so
what we call
USA,
it.
USA, you win and you're in. You come here and you win the qualifiers in the Americas region, and you get an automatic berth into that World Cup.
How many more home games this season for the Axemen?
Mate, one more home game. Regular season home game this weekend.
That's
it's a must win, mate. Yeah, you know, we need the fans to come out. And again, look, how good a value is it? $8, kids 13 and under in for free, and Bud Light still $2.
Pretty darn good value. Give me time, game time.
Kickoff 5:30, gates at 4:30. None better.
Have at it.
Have at it.
JacksAxe.com for all the
details.
We may have left out. That's pretty, even I can remember that one, man. JacksAxe.com. You made it simple on me.
For obvious reasons,
yes.
Mike. Take a look at me.
I appreciate that. All right, let's take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today. We ask people which of these three primary franchise tag players who's not yet agreed to a long-term extension would look best in Jaguar, teal, gold, and black. Started with Brandon Muchmore. He went with give me Demaryius Thomas. That was the first one I got in. And you know it's a good question when the very next response says, well, either one of the other two guys. Clarence Austin said either Dez or Houston, great additions they would be. Of course, Clarence then predicts 11-5 or 10-6, which he does in every tweet that he sends. He is an eternal optimist. Ocho Fisho said at first glance he'd say Justin Houston, but ultimately Dez is a game changer. He'd go with Dez. John Morgan went with Demaryius Thomas, says he's proven. Stevie Howland says Dez probably give me all the touchdowns. Houston, because of the injury to Fowler, which I think is interesting here when you consider which side you're on that. If you're saying Houston, I think you're probably very much a proponent of the way they went with drafting Dante Fowler Jr. Because there's still, you know, there were people that were saying that ahead of time, but certainly in hindsight after the injury as well, the chorus of voices saying, boy, what about Amari Cooper? Wouldn't he have looked good in this uniform? It's very similar, that type of situation. Did you want to draft a guy who may be the top of the depth chart wide receiver, or do you want to draft a guy who may be that long-term double-digit sack guy year in, year out? That's a little bit more rare to find. They went that direction. This is kind of the same question here. Look, we take any of these guys here. We know that.
Mate, and it's the fan base right now. They're at that time where I think a lot of them, that conservative approach, the long term, give us a couple of years to build on. I think that that is now the maybe the minority. It is at that point where the fans, we need instant action here. We need results, and we need them now. And I think that is influencing a lot of people that in this particular question, who do you want? Are you going to have that conservative approach, or give me the must-win now, people?
I've got the next four, Christoph, Duval Doom, Cristiano down in Brazil, Allison all weighing in, saying Justin Houston for a variety of reasons, but mostly because he's going to make that pass rush that much more fearsome. So, look, you can go either way on all those guys, and for their team's sakes, they all hope that they get it locked up by 4 o'clock today with a long-term deal. I'm going to say at least one of these guys gets it done, and I'm going to guess Justin Houston is the most likely, even though you're starting to see some reports now indicating that these wide receivers, I thought Charles Davis made a good point earlier, they're all in Denver. You don't know if you got Peyton Manning beyond this season. In Dallas, I don't think the look, they want to win now. Everybody wants to win now. I don't think they have the same sense of immediacy that Tony Romo, if he doesn't win it this year, he's coming back next year. You really don't know that with Peyton Manning. And once that happens with Denver, they may be hitting the reset button to some degree. So if you've got him for one more year, and you know you've got him for one more year, don't you want him to have his primary target in there? Certainly they want him to have that. The question is, how much are they willing to pay for it?
Exactly. And Denver is a situation where it is, for a multitude of reasons, it really is a must win for Peyton Manning, if not anything else.
Christoph, by the way, said he's rugby union all the way. We'll sway him. We'll fix him.
Yeah, we'll fix him.
All right.
We'll sort him out.
We'll fix him.
Hey, guys, before we go real fast, Tyler, can Spinner please reiterate where the game is? We had a few callers here wondering where the game was this weekend.
University of North Florida at UNF.
Hodges?
No, we're not in Hodges Stadium. We're actually at the field beside that. They've upgraded the practice soccer field for us. There is bleachers. There is full concessions. There is all the rest of it. It's just literally next door to Hodges Stadium.
No, you got to love that, man. It's fun. It's a blast. I mean, if you've never been, it's an absolute blast to go see the Jacksonville
Jaguars play. Thanks, mate.
Oh, come on. It's been great, and not only just fun to watch as an aesthetic, as a sport, as highly competitive as any team in the league since your inception. So,
without a doubt.
You know, you're going to go out there and you're going to see a Jacksonville franchise that has really established himself nationally and has made, I would say, from my vantage point, as big an impact on the sport itself in the United States as any one individual enterprise can claim. I mean, you know, with the guys that you've brought in internationally, the teams that have come in, the coaches, the influence that you've had with all that stuff. It's been a good relationship with the Jaguars, too, hasn't it?
It's the Jaguars, unbelievable relationship. Cannot sing the praises of everyone down in this organization high enough for the support for us and the recognition that we've got when we do bring championships back to here.
You are flying the flag today. You got your Jags gear on
today.
I've
got my Jags gear on frequently. Always, mate, Jag shirts, if it's not an Axeman shirt, I'm off. Often in a Jags shirt.
And it really is fun. The Jags do a great job. They tweet out, the encouragement to, for folks to go attend games, different sports. They do it with the Sharks. They do it with the Suns. You know, they're very much interactive and very aware of, everything that's going on in the sporting landscape here in town.
If you haven't done so, get your Jags tickets. Get on it.